It's View From 202, a New York Red Bulls fan podcast available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and direct from our website, viewfrom202.com. Praise the Lord, I was born to travel. It's episode 55 of View From 202 on this long-ass holiday weekend, as always brought to you by
weekend.
Alex Peaches Chang.
Hello.
Sam Place.
Hey.
And me, Britt Bird.
If you're going to do it right, ass holiday weekend.
Ass holiday weekend?
Ass holiday. Yeah. I like this holiday.
It is a nice and long one. I took today off. Sam, you had a half day, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have today, tomorrow off. Peaches has begun his fun employment, so we're just in solid kickback mode right now. I scheduled myself absolutely zero things for this long weekend. I'm having a glorious staycation. I have not done anything, and I have no regrets. It's great. It's exactly what I wanted. Everything I dreamed of. What about you guys?
That's good for you.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, no plans. Yeah. I don't know. Go to the beach. Go to the most crowded beach in one of the most crowded cities.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow, so that's going to suck.
Please don't look for us.
Well, I guess
it's okay. We're gonna get together a flotilla and actually charge onto Christie's Beach in New Jersey and reclaim it for the people, right? Because it's the people. We're honorary New Jersey citizens for being Red Bulls fans. This is canon.
I'm the only one here who was ever.
No, it's okay. It's just ask all the blue folks. We're basically New Jerseyans for liking this team. So that means we are entitled to Governor Christie's mansion and his beach, and we're going to go get it back for everyone.
His beach.
Yeah. Our beach. Excuse me. Sorry. Yeah. We're going to go to and then single-handedly revive the entire town of Asbury Park through the power of saxophone.
I thought that was happening already through the powers of gentrification.
Yeah, global world-class football. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to demean
undefeated.
APFC.
Undefeated.
That's true. Cool. But yeah, amongst this long weekend of doing nothing, there was a New York Red Bulls game last week. Open Cup game. Wow, we still made it into the second round of the Open Cup, or like the fifth round, or whatever. You know what I mean? The second round for MLS teams.
The quarterfinals.
We round of 16, actually. But yes, we won, so now we're in the quarterfinals.
Mm-hmm.
But we beat the Philadelphia Union in penalties. Lo and behold, Peaches and Sam were actually right about
the penalties.
Really close.
Oh, yeah.
Sam at least got it on the second try. Peaches at least. This is his first time. But Sam was closer on the penalty count.
Yeah,
actually, yeah. Yep.
But at the end of the day, we get the same amount of points. So
that's true. I need to when we lose,
it makes me feel better knowing that I was just more accurate than you.
When we lose, I kind of stop tallying that stuff. It really bums me out to like I kind of just go into lockdown mode when we're not playing well. So I've got like a long backlog of those things
have
to go.
Have fun.
Yeah. So lunch breaks are gonna be fun now, but
oh my god, my voice.
Yeah. But yeah, we are also right that Sal Zizzo fucking let off. Like, actually, this is very much like the time I predicted we were going to beat NYCFC 8-0, and then we actually beat them 7-0, and I was so mad. And then we said, oh yeah, Sal will be something weird, like second in the penalties. Lo and behold, Sal Zizzo fucking leads off.
I wasn't there. I wasn't at the game, but I can only imagine the reaction in the South Ward when Sal fucking Zizzo shows up for the first penalty kick.
It made sense. We were playing like such garbage by then that everyone just wanted to go home and was mad. So when Sal walked up, everyone was like, you know what? Fuck it. Fine. Yeah, actually. Although, you know, I have to say, like, of the things that I expect Sal Zizzo to suck at, penalties is not necessarily one of them. I was kind of like, you know what, maybe he will just bury it. He just keeps it simple, as opposed to our, Sasha, who overthinks a penalty 8 million times. But, to his credit, he also sank his.
Mm-hmm.
But let's rewind, I guess, to the actual game itself. We roll out with three center backs, for real this time, not just a convoluted lineup. That we struggled to make sense of on the path. We actually were playing three center backs as center backs. We're also playing four midfielders, or like four central midfielders, what you would expect. We're playing Davis, Question, Adams, and Felipe all at once. We play Bradley up top, and then who are the wings again? I don't know.
The wing backs were Kamar
and
Sal.
Okay, of course.
Kind of a revelation, I think, for Sal.
Uh, I know what you mean. I don't think he was so fantastic to say he was a revelation, but I think it seems to be his most natural position.
Not that he was a revelation. Aggregate. It was a revelation for him.
I guess. It's an aggregate of all the things he's been asked to do the last 2 years. So he seemed most comfortable there. But it actually was not long in the making, or at least not in its original formation. So
long
actually,
in the making.
Yeah, it wasn't going for that, because I was thinking of Colin first.
That's such a common name. I think I've done that on accident like 3 times already. So like
Long was not even the first sub to be made due to injury. Long makes it into the second half. It was actually Aurelien Colin, who, you know, was subbed out in the 23rd minute due to injury. Gotta say, it was not necessarily his best day so far. There was that long through ball that kind of got past our entire defense, and then after a great one-on-one save from Mara, the ball popped up into the air, and Colin had all the time to get under it, and somehow he gets beat from behind by a Philly attacker who's shorter than him. This then leads to, I think, Long deflecting it, and Mara deflecting it again, so it's a double save for Mara. Good look for him, but a little curious that Colin got beat on something like that, something that's supposed to be his strength. Anyway, he gets subbed out. I think he is questionable. He's expected to maybe be probable for next week, so not the regular season game at New England, but the next round at New England for the Open Cup. Anyway, Connor Lade comes in. This means Sal Zizzo's brief stint at his natural position of wing back is shifted over to right center back. And then eventually, as Peaches has so elaborately pointed out, Aaron Long also gets injured, which leads to Taxi getting moved into the center back group with Sal Zizzo and Damien Parnell, and Tyler Adams actually ends up moving back to right back. But again, we're getting ahead of ourselves. We score in the 42nd minute, courtesy of a Sasha Kljestan goal. He's basically entirely unmarked after a good bit of pressing play and assist from Bradley Wright Phillips.
And Sean Davis.
Sean Davis is clear in getting that, or is key in getting that turnover. Going to the half, looking pretty good. I say we play pretty good until 75th, 80th minute, or maybe 70th, 75th minute. As I said, it was one of those games where it's easy to forget you're only up by one. You got the sense that you really should have punished them and put them away. Lo and behold, Philadelphia starts getting back in the game. We seem to lose our legs, and Roland Alberg scores a goal in the 86th minute, which it looks like it was offside. We can't really know. Looking at the highlights, the camera is not on the players at the moment of the pass, or it's not on the back line, but he's basically standing stationary with his back to goal, waiting for the ball when it gets to him. It's hard for me to imagine how he's not offside. However, I won't complain, as Lord knows we gave up so many goddamn chances to Philadelphia in that second half there that we should have really been punished by one of them. Any team that is not as helpless as Philadelphia would have punished us several times over. So we go into extra time, where we continue to put up a lot of nothing, and then we go to penalties, where, as we say, we sink 5 of 5 in a very non-Red Bull way. But before we get further, what do you guys think of this game?
I'm a fan of the new formation. I think I've been saying that we should go for 3 in the back. Gives us a lot of stability in the back, and also helps our fullbacks play kind of more naturally, as they've always been playing. I think it kind of makes sense, too, because all of our wingers have been kind of playing very narrowly this season, so we might as well just put out more central midfielders to play the narrow spots and have our wingbacks take the wide areas and dedicate themselves to that. But I also don't think this is a sustainable formation for us, because we just don't have enough center backs. We need like 5 or 6 starter-quality center backs to be able to play this.
Why do you say 5 or 6?
We should have a backup, I think, for each position in center back.
I can see maybe 5, 6 sounds like a bit
specific
right
to each role that each of the
yeah,
center
but,
backs
but,
is playing.
But 3 in the back, like, yeah, 3 in the back, like the central center back plays a far different role than the wide center backs do.
Okay, that's fair.
I think it's reasonable to expect 2 guys on the bench who can come in and play.
It's not Connor Lade, despite Jesse was thinking about it. He said in the post match he was thinking about leaving Connor Lade in the middle.
Jesus. I mean, I only want to see Connor Lade in the middle if he's paired with Tim Schmoll. I expect nothing less. But
yeah, I thought going in after watching the Open Cup game against NYCFC, I had my doubts about Ryan Mara, especially his quickness to react to plays in the box, and on even on shots that were, you know, at him as well. But I thought he had a pretty good game, and to see that change in maybe a week, 2 weeks is refreshing, and it leaves, you know, me at least hopeful when we go play them again. We play in New England again, not this week, but next week in the next Open Cup game.
He came off his line quite a bit.
Yeah, I thought I agree.
For Ryan Mara.
I agree that I thought he looked much better this game than in the City game.
Yeah, a step in the right direction, I think. That's
he also
important.
Bailed us out numerous times.
That's true. Ryan Mara does make a save off Picot in the penalty kicks. That is all he needs to make. As we do bury all five in the postgame interview, that's exactly what Mara said, that he trusted the guys would bury all five, and he just knew if he could just get one, we would pull through. And our lineup of penalty
that's
taking,
a lie. That's clearly a lie. No one can expect our team to sink five penalty kicks in a row.
You got to say that, though, no matter what.
Yeah.
But our lineup, in an order that I think nobody would have guessed, is Zizo, Verón, Royer, Question, and Felipe. This is, we should remember that Bradley Wright Phillips is still on the pitch, or he finished the game, so he was eligible to take one, although he did look very gassed.
One PK, though?
Yeah, I don't know, but I don't know. I don't want to read too much into it, but the fact that he's not in the top five after being our main penalty kick taker in 2013 is, I think, says something.
Well, he was perfect in 2013.
Yeah. So. But Gonzalo slotted his away like a pro, like every young kid in Argentina is ready to do. Danny Royer channeled his very almost German-ness to put it away. I got to admit, Sasha took it right after Philadelphia missed theirs, or Ryan Mara saved theirs, and when he walked up, I think everyone in the section was just kind of like, okay, a good thing happened, that's weird, good things aren't supposed to happen, now Sasha's coming up, clearly
don't
he's
worry.
Gonna miss it, like, it's obvious, but no, Sasha makes his as well, and then I gotta say, Felipe, I think it totally makes sense to me that Felipe was fifth here. Felipe is the guy that I worry about the least for these kind of things.
Yeah.
He's the least frazzled in these kind of things, and he sunk it without question. Peaches, as he pointed out, it's the only penalty that McCarthy did not guess the right direction on. So maybe he gets lucky in that respect. But
it was a good peak. It was a good penalty.
Who would have guessed the Red Bulls would have gone 5 for 5?
Nobody.
Nobody. Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen us win a penalty shootout.
I think Leicester had better odds of winning than.
Yeah. I mean, on the whole, I'm, you know, after we were winning, after we won, and everyone was celebrating. I was still kind of grumpy. One, I was really tired. I'm going to go home.
Because it was like 11 o'clock in Harrison.
We were playing pretty bad for a good 45 minutes before the final whistle at the end of 120. So just seeing everyone celebrate, I was like, you know what? No, you guys still sucked. I'm still mad at you. But it was weird.
There was a chant about that, though.
What?
Where was this on Saturday?
Oh, that was... in the first half, after we scored.
Yeah.
Where was this on Saturday? Yeah, that was good. But, yeah, so I'm still kind of not over the moon about this performance. I thought we certainly deserved a draw in regular time. But it is nice to see the Rebels actually get a bit of luck, get a bit of pluck, and actually winning a penalty shootout. This is kind of one of those things that's entirely driven by the narrative and what ends up happening, but... It's a nice change of pace to see us win a staring contest for once. I think that was very typical of the 13 and 14 seasons that we faltered in the Open Cup like this. So hopefully this can propel us on to something else.
Yeah, I mean, I was encouraged by the fact that Jesse had the tactical flexibility to change formations entirely. I mean, he's shown to do that this season a little bit, but I think, you know... The wherewithal to go that drastic of a change is pretty encouraging.
It was very effective at freeing up space for Question.
Yeah.
The contrast between the game against NYCFC, or the league game, and the Open Cup game was very clear. Sasha finally had space. Davis was very instrumental in part of this, I think.
Philly's also a worse team.
Philly, it was very apparent how Philly was a worse team. But I think we were our shape was generally more natural and easier for us to navigate on Wednesday. I will say that it is apparent that Davis is the only player
yeah.
who has the same kind of skill that Dax had of quickly switching and turning
yeah.
the ball. It didn't really realize the degree to which Felipe doesn't do that the same yeah. way Dax did. I thought that was apparent. And it created a lot more opportunity for Sasha.
What are we calling it? Those third line passes, right?
Yeah.
That really.
Yeah. So that was important. However, I will say I was less than pleased with Jesse's personnel decisions.
Right.
In the second half, I thought the initial formation was good. Yes, it was tough circumstances having two of your center backs go out.
In the three center back formation.
But it struck me at the end, especially in extra time, that it seemed like an incredible waste to have Adams at right back. Taxi as a center back where he looked kind of lost. And then you had Felipe, Sasha, and Bradley, I think, were completely out of legs
yeah.
entirely. It's rare to see Felipe lose his energy, lose his stamina.
I was looking at you saying, is this the first time that Felipe's looked
yeah.
like...
I mean, maybe the guy's just timed for exactly 95 minutes or something. But, yeah, he did not have his legs underneath him. And I'll say that Adams... did not have necessarily the attacking and overlapping instinct of a right back, even though we know he's played there for the national team at times before, but he was much more cautious than I think you'd expect of a natural right back or wing back. But you could see he still had his legs underneath him. He still yeah. had stamina,
mm-hmm.
where Felipe and Sasha were just routinely getting the ball taken out of them, just had a lack of energy and a lack of ability to stay strong on the ball. So that was very frustrating to see that juxtaposition. And then Jesse subs in Verone but keeps Bradley in, and I think people will know that I've been very I've praised Bradley a lot this season. I've been a big Bradley fan, but he definitely does lose energy
yeah.
over time. I mean after 90 minutes you can't really blame anyone,
right.
I think it was a waste to not do like for like there.
Jesse said that he pulled Sean because he was fading.
Sean Davis?
Yeah.
I mean
I don't agree with that either, but
yeah, the guy
is also there
reason,
on training every day.
There's a reason why Jesse March is a professional
head coach,
and I am not. So, you know, we'll leave that where it is. I mean, he's probably closer to the truth than I am. But it didn't seem to pan out that way to
right.
me. I would have preferred to do a like for like because Bradley was
That's what the plan was, though. So
okay, yeah, because like Bradley was basically a non-entity.
Jesse said he was going to take BWP out at the 90th for Gonzalo.
Yeah,
but
I would have been tempted to go to. Four at the back again, have Lade play right back, Zizzo and Parnell in the middle, and Taxi still at left back.
I totally agree with you. I think over the course of the game, it became apparent once we lost the personnel we needed to do three in the back, we should have gone back to four in the
right.
back.
Right, because I understand the urge to keep your shape and not change things too much entirely, but once you had Taxi and Zizzo playing the center back roles... That's so foreign to them already that you might as well just go back to the four in the back. I think that's more comfortable.
We've changed shape mid game
yeah.
too. This isn't
yeah.
like it's like a unheard of concept for Jesse to
yeah.
do this season. It was done before. I mean, was that the same game that we did? What was it? 4-1-3-2, and
mm-hmm.
then we switched in the second half to
yeah.
a different formation.
Yeah.
We've also done the same thing with the 4-2-2-2 and changing into a 4-2-3-1. So I mean, it's not like I don't know.
It's not beyond us.
I'm surprised that he didn't make that decision.
Yeah.
During the game.
I think we got a little. I think if we lose this game, I'd be much angrier at Jesse for the way he allocated our stamina and personnel in that second half and extra time. But we pulled through, so I guess we live to die another day. But all right,
a couple weeks probably.
Yeah, a couple mm-hmm. weeks
probably, definitely.
But all right, should we do goats and woats?
Yeah. Mine's pretty clear. For GOAT, I think it's Ryan Mara.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, I guess you can't really
he kept us
disagree.
In the game. He
kept us in the game, and he has the winning save. All right, yeah, Ryan Mara. I'll give a shout-out to Sean Davis. I thought he played well.
I hope to see more
yeah.
of him in the future.
Part of that is just being in the habit of having him in the doghouse and then see him come out and actually look like his old self. Yeah. Like, oh, okay.
Great. Well, I think it's just a reminder of what he can do. Yeah. I think because, like, we were, I mean, I remember very clearly points last season where we had, you know, admired the, like, his strong points, like set pieces, his energy, some of his attacking prowess, but it wasn't there in the beginning of the season. Hopefully, that sort of confidence builds up and games like this will help him get back to, you know, recognizing the potential.
Mm-hmm. Wotes?
Start off, Britt.
damn. I will go with Colin, I guess.
Colin, really?
Yeah, losing that header in the first half was pretty bad. I'm noticing that's a pattern amongst myself. I often give Wotes to defenders who lose headers that I deem unacceptable.
Maybe Perenelle looked the worst. I
mean, he's the only one who stayed to the end.
I mean, it's true, but like our center backs, I guess, lost their men a few times in the game. So I'll give it to my boy DP.
Your boy. I don't know. Colin looked kind of flat. But at the same time, he did get hurt, so it's tough. I think there wasn't, like, in my eyes, a player who stood out as significantly worse than anybody else. So, sorry, Colin.
Mm-hmm. All right.
It's like a very, like, inoffensive wotist, if possible.
Yeah. We've had a couple of those this year. Yeah. Okay. Made up for the comprehensive team-wide vote a week ago. but, yeah, I guess before I close the book on this, I will say that, it is kind of nice to have these smaller little games every once in a while. We've spoken before about this idea that we might be in the golden age of MLS, where we still have all the investment and, like, stadiums and other, player investments and equipment that you would expect from a higher league, but you still have the accessibility of a smaller league. I think this is very much an instance of that. It's kind of nice to have just a 4 or 5 games a year where you have only, like, the diehards in the stadium, like 7,000, 5,000 people, and you kind of know everyone. It's kind of just a laid-back thing. Obviously, you wouldn't want this to be every week, but I don't mind having it periodically. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So. Something I couldn't appreciate. I was watching the game live streamed from my phone, so I didn't really get to see any of the crowd, if anything. But I do appreciate those games. It was kind of like the Cosmos game.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That we went to. I like that, the intimacy of that type of atmosphere.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that's why we should advocate for lower level soccer, because that's kind of anyone who goes to watch lower level soccer games are like.
That's true. That is the. That is, like, the main selling point for low-level soccer, isn't it?
Yeah, like Detroit City and stuff like that.
Even in England, like, people rant and rave about that exact kind of thing. So, not quite at the championship level, but below.
Yeah.
Cool. So, that's the wrap on our win in penalties against the Philadelphia Union, breaking our losing streak to Philly in the Open Cup, finally. Meaning that we've also directly denied a trophy to NYCFC and Philly already this year. That helps. That's not bad. I'll take it. catch us after the break as we continue our weird mid-season trend of having recurring games against opponents. This time it's against New England.
It's so weird.
But we're going to have it again.
It's such a weird trend.
So get ready for more redundancies, folks, after the break. Francisco, where the forest meets the bridge. I thought I saw you standing there, and then you fell into the well. But that was many years ago, and I am so much older now. My brother is a soldier now. Welcome back to segment 2. Recapping the Open Cup action last week. You know, I'm tired of recapping the MLS action. Also, it's kind of bumming me out because we're not doing too hot in the table. So let's recap all the different things outside of MLS that happened. First off, Toronto won the Canadian Championship, which, you know, whatever. 4 teams. Although I will say that if the Red Bulls played in the Canadian Championship, we probably also would have found a way to not win it yet. You know, I think we all know this deep within our bones to be true somehow. But looking back, we have the New England Revolution beating DC United 2-1, which I think is a lesser of two evils. We'll take it.
Yes.
We have Miami FC beating Atlanta United at the death by a Poku goal. He's still a thing. I totally forgot about Poku until then.
Yeah,
that's good.
Boy.
Good for you, Poku. 3-2. We have FC Cincinnati beating the Chicago Fire in penalties as well. Although I think the Fire controlled like 80% of the possession or something in this game.
Apparently their keeper had just one of the most... Just greatest games.
Seeing the highlights from this game made me realize or remember that FC Cincinnati's crest is prominently the letters FC in like an orange shield, which is seems like the entirely wrong part of your name to emphasize in a shield. But I'll leave it to you, Cincinnati. You're the people getting 30,000 people out. You have Sporting KC beat the Houston Dynamo, a yearly tradition for the Dynamo to lose in the Open Cup, 2-0. You have FC Dallas beat the Colorado Rapids 3-1. You have the Earthquakes beat the Sounders 2-1. And you have the Galaxy beat Stock Republic 2-0. So, our quarterfinals currently look like, out west, the Earthquakes playing the Galaxy in a Cali Classico.
Another one.
That's pretty good. I bet MLS is very satisfied with that.
The Stanford one just happened.
Yeah. Sporting KC playing Dallas.
I wonder if though.
Not quite Sporting KC against Houston, but that did just happen. So that's a pretty good classic West showdown, Prairie showdown.
It's like every rivalry happened in the Open Cup.
Yeah.
It had just happened in MLS.
Yeah.
Seattle,
yeah.
Portland, NYCFC, Red Bull.
That's a good point. I was going to say that this scheduling thing was kind of random and arbitrary, but actually now that you pointed out, it's not really.
No.
Because the Open Cup basically forces regional rivalries. And then if we schedule rivalry week the same week, yeah, of course it's going to happen.
Yeah.
All right, so it's not arbitrary at all. I take back my future statement. But you have the two lower league teams, NASL versus USL here, Miami FC playing FC Cincinnati.
Who do you want?
Cincinnati has a better narrative, I think.
My sister went to college in Cincinnati.
Cincinnati. For me as well.
Yeah.
I mean, Miami also, like, they had the whole hot babes thing, which kind of rubbed me the wrong way. And
that's
Poku.
Weird. Yeah, Cincinnati's
intro. The Poku.
Yeah.
That situation.
Cincinnati's intro viral video was very awkward and cringeworthy, but it was not problematic.
Right.
So, point to Cincinnati. Also,
I mean, it probably was problematic.
Yeah, if we can try to find a way, no matter what.
Oh, man. Well, there's going to be more fucking Harambe chants. Too.
God, is that, rest in peace to the Harambe meme, I think, as well.
But I think the fact that the meme is dead is, like, all the more reason for people to, like, think it's, like, funny to chant about it.
Even that's true.
Harambe.
That was definitely the most crossing the line of all of them.
Shit.
That's true, though. That meme pretty much only thrives upon people insisting that it's dead and being like, oh, you know what is also dead? Harambe, who died for our sins. And let's not get too ahead of ourselves, because of course that means we have to play the Revs and beat the Revs in Cambridge to even get a chance at playing the winner of Miami and Cincinnati. So we're in the final eight. Yeah, as I said, we play the winner of the two lower league teams. So on paper, you'd think this is one of the easier tracks in the U.S. Open Cup. Philadelphia, not a good team. NYCFC, pretty decent team, but we already beat them. The Revs, also below the line. And then a lower league team before getting to the final, and a final is going to be difficult no matter
so
what.
So we're going to beat the Revs and lose to FC Cincinnati.
Maybe. Yeah. But that's a pretty good path. It reminds me of the last time... Or 2 years ago when we lost to Philly, we also, I think, had already secured home field advantage for the rest of the tournament if we could just beat Philadelphia. Right. And then I think we also had a lower league team or something lined up. But, of course, we screwed it up. But, yes, New England is our foe.
I feel like in the U.S. Open Cup, though, like, worser teams are the more dangerous ones because that's kind of all they have on the line.
It's true. Yeah.
Like Philadelphia, like the amount of times they made the final.
I think the ideal team to play in the Open Cup is a team that has not, like an MLS team that has not been taking it very seriously, yet they're good enough to casually beat lower league opposition until they played you with like subs and backbenchers.
So like a Bruce Arena LA.
Yeah. And then by the time they play you, they're like, yeah, we don't really want to be here. And then you can just beat them. If you can play those kind of teams as much as possible, that's the best. Whereas, yeah, I think you're right. The lower league teams are really gunning for it more than that type of team. Honestly, I think the Dynamo are always like this. Dynamo do terribly in the Open Cup every year. They never really show up. But or, like, really the best team to play is Hans Bacca's Red Bulls, where Hans Bacca and Thierry Henry don't even fly out to the fucking game. But that is behind us.
It's a magical tournament.
Yeah. The magic of the cup, TM. Oh. But yeah, New England is our next opponent, but not in the Open Cup. We're playing them on Wednesday, but in Foxborough, not Cambridge, for MLS action. New England, where are they in the table? What's their deal? They actually have a winning home record, I think, as we talked last week.
Do they know
things?
Let's find out.
Yeah. But they have 20 points on 18 games. They are 5-8-5. I think all five of those wins have come at home. Juan Agudelo, key player, as always.
Fagundes,
I think, is going to be in the game, but I believe...
You know who's not going to be there?
Rowe. Tell me. Kellen Rowe's out.
Because he's playing on the national team.
Yes. Wait, Kellen Rowe is?
Yeah. He played against Ghana, right?
Wow, I didn't realize he was that bad. God damn it, I just Googled New England to hit when that happened. New England is a region in the United States.
Rose started, fuck.
Yeah.
New England's availability. Fagundes was suspended one match, but it was a match over last weekend, so he will be available for a game on Wednesday. However, New England will still be without Kellen Rowe and Juan Agudelo. But the New York Red Bulls will be without Tyler Adams, Taxi, and Murillo. And I think the news is that Long is available, but Colin is not.
Oh,
is that correct?
I don't know. I haven't seen.
So neither team is going to be at full strength.
Arguably us less so at full strength.
Although, I don't know.
Their fullbacks have been their best players this season.
I guess. I mean, Taxi has, but I think...
And our worst at times.
Yeah, true. Definitely true. Agudelo is an important player for them. Kellen Rowe, I think, is an important player for them.
He's on the national team.
Yeah, but he's very on and off. I mean, Andrew Farrell, as I've said in the past, sometimes looks totally above average, sometimes looks totally garbage. Hopefully we can capitalize on that. The question of whether we can do that without Taxi is a big one. Kai Kamara, though, also... relevant. Is he going to show up?
Well, do they whip crosses into Kai Kamara? Not really, right? That's kind of...
But he can create something out of nothing.
He's
capable of doing that. But away to New England on Wednesday in Foxborough.
When's the last time we won at Foxborough? Honestly.
Years.
Well, wasn't it last season? Didn't we win one of our away games last season?
I don't think so.
Or two seasons ago. I feel like Mike Grella scored in the winter.
No, I think he scored to draw.
I mean, I'm sure.
Oh, maybe it was a draw.
Yeah, or maybe I think he scored early and then they took two.
We
back.
Only have
anyway.
One. We only have the one win away.
Really?
In New England, I think. Maybe
okay.
Then.
Anyway, we do the poorly there. I don't know. What do you guys want to see in personnel changes?
I don't even know, man. Because we can't play Tyler Adams. We won't have our best fullbacks.
So I think it seems Layden like a Sean Davis game for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Layden Zizzo on the fullback positions.
Four in the back?
Four in the back. Yeah, we don't have enough center backs to do three in the back.
I wonder, I mean, if you figure you see at least Ndam on the bench here.
Yeah.
Probably not starting. That's probably a little bit too much all at once.
So Parnell and Long.
Parnell and Long in the middle. Zizzo on the right, Late on the left.
Yeah, Davis and
Felipe.
4-2-3-1, I'd say.
All right. We're probably going to struggle with Davis and Felipe at the same time, though. I mean, we're gonna have to tell Felipe.
Well, that was the original plan, though.
Right, I mean, but we're gonna have to tell Felipe to stay home. I think I'd prefer Felipe to be
the
told
destroyer.
To be, yeah, the destroyer rather than.
Davis had a lot of energy, though.
That's true, but
I'd rather have him farther up the pitch. I don't know. I like.
He's a better distributor. Yeah.
He's an 8 rather than a 6. I think.
Either way, he's a 10 rather than okay. either of them. But
I tend to agree with you, Britt. That makes sense. Who's playing out wide?
Well, we have heard that Mike Grell is out for the season.
Yep.
So Royer.
So Royer probably is written Muil. In pink. And ink, not pink. Muil is a strong shout, and then probably Bradley up top. I mean, that's what my money would be on.
Yeah.
I would not mind seeing a Verón start, though.
I wouldn't mind seeing Verón start. I wouldn't
Will
mind
he, though?
Seeing Etienne get some minutes.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
No, he'll be. Will he be?
I think he'll probably be with Haiti.
Yeah, he'll be gone.
I would like, but the broader
point.
Wait,
he didn't get called up for the Gold Cup for Haiti.
But for the broader point, I agree. I would like to see Etienne get minutes more. When we were asking the other week, who was competing for spots? Etienne was one of them, and Grella was the other one that I'm not remembering.
It.
Yeah. So would also not mind to see Etienne get 15, 20 minutes at the end of games when Bradley runs out of legs as well.
Mm-hmm.
So. Jesse, make that happen. But yeah, I definitely expect the conventional or most normal lineup we've been trotting out so far this season.
Yeah. I also wouldn't mind some transfer rumors, but...
Yeah, true. But I think the well is really dry right now, so we'll wait till we get some more leads before we really speculate on that. What do you think is going to happen?
I think we lose this game. I think we should keep our mind focused on the Open Cup game when it comes to New England away. We play them at Harvard, right?
Yeah, we play them at Harvard, but we play them an entire week apart. It's a regular frequency of games.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see us winning at Foxborough.
It's not like a short turnaround, though. There's
Foxborough,
no reason to
July
not go 5th, for it.
I feel like I've felt this before. I've seen this before.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I also don't think we're going to win. I think I'm going to go out there and get a draw, though.
I mean, I think we should try for a draw. I don't think we'll get it, though. So I think we're going to lose 2-0.
I think we're going to... That's fair. You're sticking to it. Sticking to our pregame prediction.
We don't... but we also don't have personnel right now. Our team's not complete right now.
That's true. I feel like this is just going to be, like, the total... it'd be similar to, like, how we kind of confidently beat NYCFC... in the first interaction, and then the subsequent second interaction, despite them being opposite in terms of MLS and MLS game and then Open Cup game. I feel like we're going to come out and draw in Foxborough. Sure as hell are not going to win at Foxborough, but I think we could pull off a 1-1 draw. I think that's within reason. And then at the same time, I mean, obviously we're going to talk about it next week, but I think we're going to lose the Open Cup game.
Well, I would prefer the opposite. This is a clear-cut case, I think, where I would take the
Open
Cup.
I would prefer the opposite as well, but that's just not how it's going to happen.
Yeah, I'll also go 1-1, but yeah. Cool. Any other straddling thoughts, stray thoughts, before we sign off?
Someone link us to someone.
Yeah, while we have no real rumors of new additions, we had 2 contract extensions.
Oh, yes. Sorry,
Luis,
it's been a while.
Luis Robles and then Felipe.
Well, we know how contract extensions work on this team.
Yeah, they don't actually mean anything.
how about that RMLS post today about...
Didn't see it. What was it?
The NYCFC's front office being horrible.
Basically, they're just like not giving proper access to players.
They're talking to the press?
Yes.
The communications,
office. And they're not... like what they're doing is they're like not giving proper access. They're also not giving any access to the larger star players. And then when some of those star players do have exposure to the press...
They give it to big names.
They give very like dry... responses,
and they preferentially treat like ESPN over local newspapers and stuff like that.
Yeah,
so which is like
makes sense.
Yeah, not surprising to us.
And the same time, they were also commending the Red Bulls front office for Gordon Stevenson, who is apparently doing a good job at maintaining press relations and being responsive. Apparently, NYCFC's communications office just doesn't respond to a lot of emails.
I bet they're driving up scarcity through that.
So, like part of the the department was hired directly through Manchester City, so they were directly from England. It makes me wonder if that's just the approach that they
I think this is a bone of contention
that they would normally take in England with Premier League type press, and that's just their response is to be cold and like irresponsive,
right?
Just generally.
I remember when Andre
or do they just
here.
Really not get it?
Yeah. I think it's probably a little bit A, a little bit B. I think they probably think they're above it a little bit, and that they answer to Manchester. They don't answer to New York.
Yeah.
New York being MLS headquarters.
But even Christian Arouse, right? Is that his name?
I don't know. From Christian Bootlicker, but...
From Empire Soccer even said that he agrees with the poster about NYCFC's communication office.
So. Wow, that's a big move for him. But yeah, I remember when Henri was over here... he said it was an adjustment for him where
the locker room.
In England, press are not allowed, just free reign to the locker room as they're here. You pick out one or two players who go to that little, like,
and get their, drop like, 30 over. Seconds.
Yeah,
right.
And they do that little interview, but that's about it. I know some players react better to others. I think Henri, when he was here, kind of eventually gave in and accepted. That was something that was expected of him, albeit reluctantly at first. But yeah, so I think it sounds like it's slightly a cultural difference, but I think they feel like they probably have the weight or the heft to just defy the rules.
I mean, here's the thing though, if you continue to do that and you alienate local publications and newspapers and in a city where you desperately are seeking for press, maybe this is one of our small battles because we have a competent communications department.
Maybe. But I mean, if you share a press office with the Yankees, who have people in every single newspaper, no matter what, and good connections, no matter what, they're probably never going to be fully isolated. So
yeah,
I don't know. That's interesting though. I hadn't heard about that.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, is that going to be it for this week?
Yeah. Anybody else have anything?
No emails, right?
No.
Benny emailed us, but it wasn't a serious
email.
Oh,
new Salzburg logo?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Is this required by the CCL?
Yes.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's for only their... It's for their UEFA games.
UEFA Champions League, right?
It is funny. Yeah, sorry. CONCACAF centrist.
there aren't
the
many
only
of you.
One.
yeah, sorry. Yeah. What the fuck is Europe? But
I think we should read the Benny email, but you can go ahead.
It is funny that that in Europe they make you play with like different fonts on your back. I always thought this is the weirdest thing that like the EPL apparently has a proprietary font on that they use.
It's a number thing. The same thing is the case with MLS. If we had different equipment sponsors, I think we'd have different.
There's one year numbers. Where like Tottenham had like six different kits.
Oh my god!
Because they had a different EPL or a different Europa League one,
right.
A different EPL one, and like a different one for each cup. So
Jesus.
Hopefully we don't do that.
Anyway, new kit or new they came out with new kits and they actually look great.
I think they look weird,
but I mean ours look kind of weird too, to be honest.
Yeah.
But either way, I think it's not as boring as the last few Nike jerseys have been.
Sure.
So.
Oh yeah, that's true. Nike jerseys are fucking horrible. Like the new Chelsea jerseys look, in my opinion, they're too simple. They look terrible.
So this is slightly this is a little more creative, I'd say.
Yeah.
They're easy to look up. You know, so when you get a chance, go ahead and also check out the logo. It's a single bull going across a circular logo and has FC on the top and Salzburg at the bottom, and it's totally different than what they
are
using for their traditional regular season logo.
I think there's a little bit less focus on kind of like Red Bull the brand in this version, but
it's promising, I guess.
But at the same time, we're also focusing on the bull part. Like, I kind of like the fact that we have a shield.
I don't hate it. I don't love it.
Right.
It feels a little dated. Like, the action lines feel a little dated.
I think the action lines, though, might just be specific to Salzburg's logo in general.
It's true. We used to have them for a year or two, and then we got rid of them.
Yeah. So maybe if there were, and they probably won't, but if there were to be some sort of rebrand like that,
also,
it would probably get rid of those action lines.
Yeah, I'm newly biased against circular logos or crests.
Oh, I agree. I think circular crests look great, but since City has one that's very good right now, we should
try
to...
City has one now, and then Columbus had a good one after that immediately. I think they're kind of being played.
I think they both look really good, but we should try to zag while everyone else is zigging.
Yeah, let's do the shield. Probably gonna switch. Let's have a shield.
I think the shape of Atletico Madrid's crest would be a good one to go after.
Like that shield, yeah.
Yeah, but it's still, like, simple.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not cartoony like Arsenal's.
Right.
So... All right. Cool. So, that's it for us.
Well, read the email. Read Benny's email.
Oh, Benny's email. Who is more soulful, Bruce Arena or Bruce Springsteen?
You know my answer.
Okay. Peaches Chang, the New Jersey native, says...
Obviously Bruce Arena.
Okay. Fair. Sam, what do you think?
I say Springsteen. That's pretty conventional.
As long as Arena keeps playing Dax McCarty, he has more soul, in my opinion.
Wow. Let's see how long his tenure... on the national team runs.
It's going to be until Russia.
I think
maybe we can revisit the question after Russia.
That's a good point. I think we will. Valid. The depths of Arena's eyes, I think, you can't sleep on that, but they really, the bags in there really have a lot of wear in them.
I just feel like the idea of the amount of soul that Bruce Arena has is really nice, but I feel like if I got to know him, it'd be disappointing.
He really channeled his soul in his performance in Mike McGee's Day Off. That was a really great cameo from him.
That was good.
Yeah.
I think this Gold Cup might be his Nebraska, though, so, you know.
Maybe, yeah. I'm going to pretend like I know what that means. Same. But,
only time will tell.
Yeah. But once I went to a Daily Show screening in college when I could just do things at 2:30 p.m. What's his name? Springsteen just walked in because he's friends with John Stewart. And he walked in and like sat in the little VIP part of the stage. And I was already raising my hand because the whole like Q&A thing, and John Stewart calls on me. Oh yeah, you were there. Yeah. And I ask like fuck, marry, kill. I think I said Colbert, Bill O'Reilly, or Springsteen. And I was actually planning on asking this before Springsteen walked in, and then Springsteen sat in. And I think these are people that John Stewart is all friends with, which. O'Reilly, it's telling that he was slightly friendly with O'Reilly, but nevertheless, I like inadvertently made eye contact with Springsteen as I said his name, and it's the most awkward, it's one of the most awkward moments I've ever felt. I think John Stewart said fuck all three and then just moved on. He seemed also very uncomfortable by this, which I was surprised by, but that moment led me to believe that Bruce Springsteen actually has no soul.
Oh, well, you can tell this to your grandchildren.
That's true, yeah.
But you looked Bruce Springsteen in the eye and asked John Stewart
if he would fuck him.
Yeah.
And he said yes. So, alright, with that, I think we're going to sign off. This has been episode 55. You can always reach us at contact@viewfrom202.com.
Cease to resist, given my goodbye. Drive